those who are doing international exchange, it's definitely something that could be very beneficial in terms of actually just simplifying the way payments are actually conducted.
Hi there, folks. Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, where I unlock the secrets of international business success. I'm Cynthia Dearen, and today I'm talking to Heath Behnke, the founder and managing director of Holon Global Investments and the executive chair of Libra Australia. Since 2016, Heath has focused on researching and investing in businesses taking advantage of global digital innovation, and this has led him to get deeply involved in the world of cryptocurrencies. Today, I'm talking to Heath about the Libra, a cryptocurrency proposed by Facebook, which describes itself as having the power to transform the businesses and the lives of billions of people around the world. Heath, welcome to Business Beyond Borders.
Yeah, thank you, Cynthia. Well, great to be on board.
So today we're talking about the Libra. What is it?
It's interestingly that if you're in the US, they're calling it a lot of people calling it a cryptocurrency, but actually for those in the cryptocurrency space, they're actually, you know, they don't appreciate the way that's been characterized, because in essence, the way Libra is structured, it's actually utilizing the technology, advanced technology like blockchain, et cetera, digital wallets. But the reality is actually what they're creating is a new asset class that underlines Libra. So when you take your money out of your, say, ANZ bank deposit and put it into Libra, it'll be invested in a globally diversified pool of bank deposits and short-dated government securities. So Libra is taking advantage of the blockchain technology to enable the system to be far more operating efficient for the current system, basically. And it's really that whole conversation that's been on for a long time. We're all getting a bit frustrated about why can't we just send money in a way that's, you know, near instant and very low cost. And you can see that even today, when we do transfers, it's a pretty simple thing. But internationally, it's not a simple thing to do actual transfer, and it costs money, and there's time and money involved. So Libra is actually looking to solve that through basically providing near instant, very low cost money transfer on a very safe asset. So that's the overriding aim of the Libra currency.
How is it different to the other cryptocurrencies that are already out there?
Yeah. So if you look at a purist in the digital space, who they would define, you know, a cryptocurrency, say like Bitcoin, where it is a natively, it's actually native to its actual, to the Bitcoin platform, so to speak, in the sense that it actually drives the economic outcomes and incentives around that. So it's pure in the sense that that the economic incentives that underlie that drive that entire economic framework. And there are many other projects out there which are driven in that way with new business models around that. But again, Libra is very just basically utilizing the blockchain technology and digital wallets to make the current payment system far more efficient in the way it's actually run. So in some ways, it's kind of it's really laid across the current system as opposed to creating a totally new paradigm where in the case of something like Bitcoin, it's a totally new paradigm in the way monetary policy is actually conducted versus the way the current system is actually conducted, for instance.
So it basically takes its value from a different place to something like Bitcoin or Ethereum, is that?
That's right, yeah, exactly right. So the Libra, and the main thing that it derives its value from that underlying basket of basically government fiat currencies, or currencies backed by governments around the world, and the taxpayer revenue from that within the existing system. So if you think about one of the biggest issues for those in the crypto space is actually having a natively digital asset which was stable, secure, and sound. This has been one of the biggest problems. So there's been other solutions proposed, like Tether and USD Coin, etc. But basically, Facebook is doing this on a very large scale by comparison to that. But it's something then in many young people in the digital space get very excited about, is the prospect of having something that's, you know, highly secure and that you can trust because it's basically backed and based on the current system. And the interesting thing about this, if I put my bank analyst hat on here after year, is that you're creating a new asset which is lower risk than what we have today. When you think about the diversification that you get from holding Libra, so in the context of for an Australian, for instance, now at this stage it looks like Australia won't be part of the Libra reserve, but we kind of want to be part of that conversation. That's why we're here, to be get our hand in there, so to speak. You could actually hold the Libra currency, and that actually would end up, by definition, it's actually lower risk than if the Australian dollar was part of that GDP global weighted, for instance. If Australia went under, became a banana republic, as once our past prime ministers said, you would actually retain, you know, vast majority of your wealth. So there is an interest. That's an interesting dynamic here. Is that we are in banking parlance creating this lower risk asset as well. Putting aside there'll be currency volatility, of course, relative to your own local currency, but that's one of the most interesting developments about this and considerations for regulators globally in that. When you alter bank capital structure, you have to be aware of that.
So why did Facebook propose a new currency or a new cryptocurrency?
When you look at where Facebook's doing business today, it's for the vast majority of it is in developed markets. But that represents a very small proportion. It's not the majority of the users on their platform. So that's less than 30% of the users on their platform. However, that's generating the bulk of the revenue. For them, they see an opportunity to help the 70% on that platform where they're not really driving much revenue. And one of the biggest issues they're looking to solve is to help with that financial inclusion equation by, you know, lowering the cost associated with delivering financial services in a lot of those developing markets. Now, by doing this, this enables them to, of course, extend the usability of their platform, marketplaces, and things like that. So that's where they see they don't make money out of it directly. There's this indirect benefit to actually helping the 70% in those developing markets. And if you talk to, as we've been talking to the Libra Association, that's one of the very big, the focus is on solving financial inclusion. It's why the social impact side of this is very important. While we're engaging, we have social impact groups on board with Libra Australia. Because that's really the driving motivation for this near term. Longer term, there's a bigger, if you're reading through the white papers, the Libra white papers, is the digital identity piece, self-sovereign identity, is probably the bigger thing that they're interested in actually solving, and that requires you to have a payment mechanism that's very, very low cost, in essence. So that's embedded within those. If you look at the most important thing that's happening in blockchain is around self-sovereign identity and our individual digital identities online and data and access rights associated. And that's a big part of this longer term where this actually heads.
Okay. So you're the executive chair of Libra Australia, and that is linked to, as I understand, the Libra Association. Can you tell me a bit about that? Let's start with how you actually got involved with the liberal movement. What's the story there?
Yeah, so I come from I was an actuary by training. So when I went through university, but I quickly went into financial markets, and I've had an affinity with technology and financial services since I entered and financial markets back. Actually, it was around the tech wreck era, just before the tech wreck, actually, back in March 2000. So we're at an interesting intersection of time where we see that the global digitalization of financial services is starting to take hold. When I say that, we've grown up with local currencies, local laws, etc., and basically local financial services systems. As we digitize, and we're seeing this in many other areas, of course, when you look at the Airbnbs and the Ubers, suddenly the model starts to change and the scalability starts to change. But we in financial services are kind of, because you're embedded in local laws and regulations and currencies, it's hard to actually, in some ways, scale a lot of what happens in financial services, like banking. There's very few truly global banking organizations as a result of the way our current systems are actually set up. But when blockchain came along and started to, in about 2016, really went down the rabbit hole, starting to have a hard look at what the technology could do, distributed ledger technology, start to realize there was that possibility that things could change, and a probability that at some point a very large company would take the technology and would enable this global digitalization of financial services to come about. So in some ways, when we have investments in Visa and MasterCard, so right across that space, they're great business models. But when we saw Facebook's announcement with the Libra proposal, it was clear to us that a very significant player was involved with a genuine innovation agenda. I don't think anybody can will look at what they're doing and say, actually, that's not good for humanity. It's a very good thing for humanity. And it was clear to us that, a lot of companies in our portfolio think about how this is in the whole on Photon Fund, the global equity fund that's focused on innovation disruption, is that a lot of those bigger companies are thinking about how do they solve problems for, the 7.5 billion plus people on the planet. And of course, Australians, it's hard for Australians to think in that sort of way. And what was very clear to us, it was very important given Australia's overweighting to financial services, being our largest sector in our economy and also on our at 10%. And also because it's nearly, it's 32-33% of the Australian stock exchange, that we needed to be involved in that conversation. We needed to participate in that conversation. So it made sense to us that because of our understanding of where things were going, so that we could help drive that conversation, drive that participation. And particularly also my twin brother, Luke, had been involved in government policy and regulatory areas for 20 years. So he really understands the government machinery, the regulatory machinery on that side, how to help with that education process for everybody here in Australia with what this change actually represents. So for us, it's just very clear. Like we as Australians, as a small population of people, in the scheme of things, we're not significant, but but we've got something to contribute to this conversation, given our very strong forward thinking financial services sector, and we've been very good over time at actually embracing a lot of the new innovations that come through. If you look at our current, what the RBA's done, etc. So for us, it made complete sense. And we kind of looked around and said, who else in Australia is probably going to be doing this? And what you do so realise as well, Cynthia, there's not that many people I've met who've actually got the focus on or understand the traditional financial services infrastructure, but also what is the essence of this movement with the digital, what's going on in the cryptocurrency space and the new technologies that are actually coming through. So I think we're uniquely positioned in that way to actually help with that overall conversation.
If you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, check out the Dearen & Associates website, dearenassociates.com. So what's Libra Australia doing in that respect? How are you joining that conversation with the rest of the world?
Yeah, so, well, look, there will be down the track. There will be international connectivity with this. So it makes a lot of sense to actually have international ties and strong international linkage, of course, because being remittance, it makes sense to actually have that. So there's conversations that are going on with that international connectivity, which really will help with actually, you know, the use cases and which particularly the remittance use case, the first one, that's very important. Locally, we've pulled together universities. My university went to the ANU, Uni New South Wales, and others actually have come on board, RMIT, etc. Local law firms like Gilbert and Tobin and Piper Ullerman, lawyers who are very up to date and very forward thinking over the space to help with the legal conversation around this, to help people like Senator Jane Hume and others down in Canberra. We also got technology players who are deeply involved in the technology, who actually understand the requirements to run the institutional grade infrastructure and the high throughput that will be required for this. This is one of the issues that Facebook's had to contend with. Is right, we've got a large base of users. We would expect we need to be able to actually operate at scale. So you need the right technology players. And we do have that in Australia and connectivity with that. The all important social impact groups. So they're very important in this equation. So we've already got a couple signed up, but we're looking to engage with more of those players who can really help us with really trying to address the underlying issues associated with financial inclusion today and understanding that. And the Libra Association themselves seem to have really made it that very clear. So that's a very big driving motivation actually behind it. So we've pulled together and we're talking to a lot of the e-commerce players here and financial services companies here, right from the larger end of town, the big banks to the neobanks as well, who understand, you know, what this is about. And of course, for larger banks, it's the conversation is different than for a smaller digitally engaged neobank. You don't have to convince them around where the world's heading, because this is what they're capitalizing on, and they're starting from scratch. All these, you know, these players are just a brand new out of the blocks, and so they understand. But there's a conversation to go on with regulators here with that to understand what this is. The bigger banks, is that the conversation is a bit different, because the bigger issue that they face is really our physicality. So you imagine, as we look forward, it's probably, you know, likely that we're probably going to reduce more branch size, branch numbers are going to reduce in the country, you know, ATMs, et cetera, as more and more as we digitize. So there is a real conversation here that they had to help a lot of the regulators and participants in the system about the evolution of money as we digitize. And of course, wrapped up in this conversation as well, is that we're seeing globally, is a central bank issued digital currency, which is starting to, because of Libra, it's that conversation is really starting to rise to the fore globally. So we're looking, also engaging with people in this ecosystem to have an understanding of that as well, because we believe that it's a natural part of the conversation that that Libra actually will drive, and we're seeing that everywhere globally. you know, some of the announcements that are coming out in particular. You've seen particularly the Chinese, their viewpoint. They're about to launch a central bank digital currency. But a lot of the Libra conversation is driving that people starting to hang on, we can evolve our money. You know, let's look at this more seriously for our own fiat currencies. How do we actually evolve our money?
You've mentioned a couple of times while we've been talking that Libra could potentially change the shape of international business. Can you tell me what that might look like? I mean, for example, what might it mean for individual companies that are doing business internationally?
Yeah, so you can see one of the areas that they're very keen on is for the 90-odd million SMEs that are using the you know, Facebook is keen on, the 90-odd million SMEs that are using their platform, is providing a payment mechanism that's very simpler for them on that platform, you can see, and particularly in with doing business internationally as well, a way that we can, you know, a bit like the Uber experience or the Airbnb experience. It's kind of like a couple of clicks and you're done, is what they're looking to do with the integration. I'm pretty sure the one thing that you see in the digital space today is like a lot of the user interfaces are very clunky. So it's kind of that's been one of the things that's held it back. It's just making it very user-friendly. The other thing, of course, as we touched on before, was the actual volatility in the space with using a lot of these currencies. But you can be assured of what those developing digital wallets here and what they're looking at doing, particularly Facebook sites with Calibra, they're looking to make it a very simple experience for users to actually transfer money to enable payments to occur. So it's those who are doing international exchange, it's definitely something that could be very beneficial in terms of actually just simplifying the way payments are actually conducted. So, and of course, the internet, the remittance use case, which is the big one they've advertised, talking about there's about nearly 700 US billion dollars in annual remittance flow, which is people are getting charged on average around the 7 or 8% mark. So when you think about that, and the average remittance size is a couple of $100, so it's about $14 a remittance in that order. So reducing that very markedly in cost, which is what the actual payment Libra payment network can do, could potentially reduce that quite markedly to very small amounts. Where it starts with like a remittance use case and just transferring money for businesses globally, then you can see, and consumers of course, but what could actually also transpire out of this is other business models, which are pretty hard to actually sort of envisage today. But as always has been the case in innovation, is that when you have something this, when you lower the cost of something quite dramatically, then other things will come about, which you think, hang on, that's pretty funky that we can do. So I'm pretty sure there'll be some young savvy people will actually take advantage of looking at, hang on, now we can transfer money safely, nearly, and at very low cost, and in a way that's very easy. Then there'll be other models that actually come out of that. But you see where the first obvious cases start. So that's the conversations we're having is, you know, with those businesses that are doing that sort of international remittances. That so there's a way there. I know I myself in my business, you know, I have to pay for the MSCI, use of the MSCI index for the whole Photon fund. And there's a transfer that needs to be done, of course. Now I'm with Westpac. Now, of course, if I did it with Westpac, they're going to charge me a lot more if I do it with TransferWise. But of course, TransferWise still makes money, but also still as much lower cost than Westpac. But the issue there is it's a bit of a time consuming process to go through to do a transfer. It's not like what I can do here locally. So, you know, you can see how that the cost of that and the time associated with that could actually reduce very, very materially.
What could it mean for traceability and money laundering, saying that it would be a blockchain-based technology?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing here, and I can understand, you know, the conversation that's going on here, because we've, you know, being involved in the current financial system, you know, over time, and, you know, we're protecting against nefarious actors, and we've had to, the whole system is bearing quite a substantial cost from that. And I've seen this through analog KYC AML, which we're still doing today. And sometimes it's very frustrating actually with that approach. But I believe that there are solutions out there for digital KYC AML, which is far more effective and far more cost effective at protecting against those nefarious actors. And one thing that's very clear about a blockchain-based system, digital-based system, is that everything's traceable. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the things, it's kind of a bit of a misnomer, so that you kind of find, if you look at where the biggest issues today are in quantum terms and money laundering and all those issues, it's in the current system. We know that. Like, it's the cash law, some of the estimates are huge with that. And we're trying to address that as a system. And you definitely don't want that popping up in a new system, of course. You want to be able to solve that. But, what's clear, and there was a analyst out of the US called Kate Long, who's big in the digital space, worked in the traditional space like myself. She's based out of Wyoming. She's driving a lot of the laws and the changes there. And as she commented, she can just see it in the banking system today. We're just spending an inordinate amount of money to try to protect against the nefarious actors. And we kind of go, I think there's got to be a better way to do this. There's got to be a better, more efficient and effective, because that all leads to higher costs for us, everybody in the system. So I think there's a real opportunity here to be part of that solution, to really over that. And the other point that she would make, that she's made very clear, and we can see this in the way the system will be run, is that it is so transparent that the real question you've got to ask yourself is, how much protection do you have from your government? Because that's how the system is very open and transparent. And look, we don't, and again, Australia's got very good actors in our system, very good actors in a sound financial system, sound institutions, great frameworks. But that's the thing that really, it's a very open and transparent system. Was anything with a digital signature, it can be found out. That's why it's kind of interesting at times I find when Phil talk about Bitcoin being used for nefarious activities. And the thing about it is that there's many of even law enforcement have been put in prison over actually thinking they could get away with taking Bitcoin, but it was actually traced. They were eventually found out. And
so potentially very good for issues around transparency and money laundering, right? Because it'll be a completely traceable currency.
Yeah. And look, there's no doubt the data and privacy issues have to be dealt with, and this is why we want to be again part of the conversations. You see the ACCC has put out that big report on digital platforms, and the platforms are here to stay. I think the death of Facebook and Google is greatly exaggerated, but I just think it's just for Australians, it's better being involved in the conversation and how we can shape it and help with those. Because I personally, for our business, Cynthia, I want better solutions around KYC AML, because it drives our customers, our investors nuts as well, and the way it actually the system operates. But you can understand the system, the compliance officers and et cetera, that what their remit is and they're not paid for any upside. It's all about trying to manage the downside and the risks. But you get to a point where it's actually kind of ask yourself, this seems to be overkill in terms of the way we're operating. But there's got to be a way that we can, and there are ways in the digital with digital solutions which are actually very robust and far more unit cost effective, that will, if we implement that, can actually lead to better outcomes, better consumer experience, and lower costs for everybody involved.
I wanted to ask you about how Libra has been showing up in the news over the last week or two. For people who don't know, Facebook is having some problems getting regulatory approval for the Libra in the US. And last week, some key founding members, including eBay, Visa, PayPal, MasterCard, and Stripe, pulled out of the project. Heath, can you tell us about why those founders pulled out and what that's going to mean for the currency?
Yeah, so it's an interesting dynamic, and you know, there's the so for those particular players, it's a very sensitive area. That's and you can sense that, you know, in the US, for instance, a couple of senators wrote some pretty heavy letters, so basically saying, you know, MasterCard, Visa, etc. You know, if you actually are part of this, then we're going to scrutinize everything you do. So basically pointed at their existing business and said, we're going to look at everything there in addition to what you're doing here. And of course, for some in the US, they kind of sat back and, you know, that's probably commentary that I think a lot of people in the US who are really trying to drive innovation wouldn't appreciate, because that's how you really stifle it, of course. And but you can understand, you know, there's quite strong, because of the issues with the messenger, I think, again, it comes down to, I don't think anybody disagrees with the innovation. I think everybody's actually quite supportive of the innovation. I think the issue is it's really because of some things that have come to light as Facebook's grown up, and you see some people in the, particularly in the US Congress, that, you know, have been, and understandably, the democratic process there with Cambridge Analytica, we know there was issues associated with that. So that was part of it, you can see. Also, the other part here is to keep in mind that this is a new payment system and is structurally very different to the one we have today, which those players actually operate in, Visa and MasterCard, what they operate in. And the revenue model for this looks very different. And that's the thing that's at stake here as well, because it's kind of... you understand, Visa and MasterCard, for instance, earn a very small fee for coordinating the network out of the overall charges that you see. The real beneficiaries of all that, of course, are their clients, which are the banks, major banks globally. So I would suspect also there's probably a lot of conversations going on behind the scenes with some of their bigger card issuers, bigger banks, saying, you know, guys, hang on, this is a change. And of course, with all disruption, there's that conversation that goes on behind the scenes as well. But there's no doubt those players have a lot to offer with their payment experience in terms of what they could actually bring to the association. However, at the same time, you know, those players are not necessarily not needed to actually make this actually come to light either. In the scheme of when you look at the and again, this is one of the things about bootstrapping a payment net, although I can understand the, you know, the issues with Facebook, at the same time, to bootstrap a payment network, you need, of this caliber, you need a very significant player with very significant reach. And Facebook has 2.4 billion users. And then when you look at the other e-commerce players that are part of this, Spotify, et cetera, you can see that the reach is there to enable this payment network to actually come to light. But I would suspect over time that they'll sit on the sidelines, they'll watch what's going on. And because they're really right at the pointy end of prudential regulation, of course, in the current system, that they need to take a conservative approach and let some of these other innovators lead that conversation. I think that's what you'll find. And in this, and so, and I think what we'll find over time here, Cynthia, is that if you look at globally today, who's been forward thinking with adopting the technologies, blockchain and et cetera, and really getting up to speed and passing regulations that make it clear in terms of what the technology can enable. And of course, Switzerland being one of those places, and why Libra is actually there and the association's launching out of Switzerland, that if you were to look at those centres in the world which are digitising, which have been very forward-thinking, I would suspect that you'll find them coming out in support at some stage around this, and because they can see the opportunity in this to actually to innovate for their own society. So I think that's, it's generally the way the whole crypto space has sort of evolved, that Libra's looking like it's sort of a similar pathway in many regards. but they want to. And I think importantly, as even from, you know, from my perspective here in Australia, we want to bring everybody along for the journey. And you don't want to just, you know, say, no, we're just going to straight away do this and bugger you. we want to actually bring everybody along for the journey to in that, and the education is required with that. So you can see, I think that over time we'll see, particularly with those who are involved in and committed to it, that as more education comes to light on what it actually is and the benefits from it, we'll, I think that we'll start to see a change in that, a change in that and conversation. But for us, again, it says that you can only be a part of that. You want to be part of the conversation first and foremost. If you're not part of it, then you kind of, you can't contribute to it. So that's, again, our viewpoint is let's be part of that conversation and help shape how this actually looks. And that's particularly our argument to a lot of Australians, the regulators here. It's very important we be a part of this, because we can see going forward that there could be quite a significant shift in the way financial services could be conducted. And it could allow us lower cost and lower risk in the system, which is a very, it's a hard thing for a lot of people to kind of comprehend on the risk side. But from my perspective, as putting my banking hat, putting my actuarial hat on, I can see how there would be benefits to countries who actually, in their country rating and a lot of the way they conduct financial services, if we continue to really push that innovation in a way like this, when you look at it, it's lower cost, it's lower risk. Hang on, maybe there's something in this that we should actually be pursuing.
So where to from here for the Libra? Are we likely to see a launch of the currency anytime in the near future, or are people going to just keep discussing it for a while? What's your prediction on that?
Well, I think, look, the framework is, they've indicated sometime in 2020 and that they're looking to launch the Libra reserve out of Switzerland. Of course, they've applied for, they've already announced, they've applied for the license, the payment license. And the Swiss, you know, and again, I keep referring everybody to watch what the Swiss are saying, because it's really down, it's down to the Swiss in terms of whether the Libra reserve gets up, and then what countries engage is really up to each country. And of course, Facebook, and as Mark Zuckerberg was saying last night, and he's just, of course, he wants the US to be on board with this. You know, he's passionate about his country being involved in this, of course. And it's really in a borderless global digital world, of course, you know, this can launch once the Swiss are happy with the actual with satisfied that Libra and the association are doing everything the right way. So it will happen. Look, I wouldn't be surprised if it gets pushed back, and the pushback will be more due to the education that needs to go on and the conversation that needs to go on to bring everybody along for the journey. And I think that's probably likely that will be pushed back in that way. But you know, again, I think a lot of people see that if you look, once they start and understanding how the Swiss have actually regulated this, how they've looked at it, you start to realize that she's quite smart to actually look at the economic functionality of what blockchain can deliver. And that's effectively, they're regulated by economic functionality. They looked at it and go, hang on, we can do it in this way. That makes a lot of sense. So I think more and more that the regulators globally and countries globally start to understand, they go, hang on, maybe this is a better way of running the way we actually run the construct of money and payments. And it's kind of like, so once people start to understand that more and more, then people will start to realize, oh, hang on, that's actually a good way to do it. And there needs to be more harmonization. You can see this. I think that conversation will probably be deferred, but it looks, you know, the genie's out of the bottle in the sense that, you know, once someone, and I think, you know, those in the crypto space have seen this for, like, they looked at it, and this is sensible, the way that the Swiss have actually approached it. But of course, the crypto space was quite small, really, in the scheme of things. And it's only now that a very, very large, significant country, a company with quite a number of users, billions of users globally, who are looking at utilizing. Now everybody wakes up to the possibility. Hang on, this basically regulation that the Swiss put in place, that's going to be exported globally. So that conversation takes time to have. And the Swiss are pretty smart when it comes to financial services, and they're right. You know, they've been at the forefront of banking and asset management for many years. So yeah, and you can see why they've been successful in crypto value and attracting a lot of investment, because they see, hang on, actually there is a real innovation here that we should be embracing. So I just think it takes time for people to understand that.
So we'll be watching with interest to see what happens with the Libra next and whether it gets up. Heath, it's been great to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for coming along.
No problems. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, check out the Dearen & Associates website, dearenassociates.com. Our consulting services, which include market research and modeling, cross-cultural consulting, and strategic business connections, deliver deep insights and create value for larger companies looking to scale internationally. If you're from a smaller organization that wants to expand its global footprint, take a look at our International Business Accelerator program, which my team and I created to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of going global. The program helps business owners to build a great strategy without having to reinvent the wheel. It creates the momentum to put the strategy into play, and it helps them to generate or raise the funds that they need to get an international expansion off the ground. We built it especially for founders and CEOs who want to take their business to the next level and wondering where to start. It's structured in a way that's simple to follow. It's digital so that you can take part from anywhere in the world. It's a lot of fun and our members love it. Check it out at dearenassociates.com.